future.
Any case, the topic that we are starting off with is emerging technologies and how to build careers in them. And this is, it's interesting because when Sundar first asked me to talk about this, I was thinking about how do I build this whole thing. The reason I say that is, I see a lot of wise people here, including Prabhadana Acharya, I see that, I'm sure they have this wisdom that, whatever technology you do or whatever you do, how you conduct your life is kind of a common thing and a common theme, right? And how you become successful is there are several common themes for that. So I kind of thought about it and I said, okay, so let me actually separate this into two parts. The first part will be about technologies that are existing or that are going to be there for the future. And the second part would be a little bit about my lessons from life, so to say, as to what did I learn and what did I think worked for me and what did I say, I mean, what could I have done better, right? So by no means is that gospel or the truth. It is just my experience and I'd like to share that with you in the next few minutes. So I'll go over some of the technology pieces quickly because I do recognize that several of you here may not be with a technology background and might find it a little difficult to kind of comprehend, but I'll try to simplify it as much as possible and then we'll move on to the to some of the lessons that I have learned. Okay, so the broad themes that are there nowadays, right, I think are, I guess, in newspapers every day. Cloud computing is a very big theme that has been catching on. Then more recently, something called the Internet of Things, where what it implies is that every device, and your phone is probably the first such device, if you think of the phone, let's say 10 years back, it had absolutely no connectivity other than connected to the service provider that you have subscribed to. But today you can use it to do several things through the internet. So, that's probably the first device on the Internet of Things. And there are several other devices that are coming up, including several medical devices, which we will see shortly. And then, of course, there is the whole thing around data, right? So just to give you an idea of the kind of data that we are dealing with today, and that makes our world a lot more complex than it was let's say 20 years back, is that if you collect all the data in the world today that is ever there, it probably covers only the last 2 years. Okay, so that is the kind of data volumes that we are generating, and that is growing at a phenomenal rate. So what do we do with this data, how do we understand this data is going to become a very important part of our lives, right? And lastly, something in the manufacturing space, there is this whole concept of what is called 3D printing, where most of you are familiar with printers that we use, right? So what is done is, in this concept, the printer, instead of generating ink, will generate actually plastic or some other material so that it can actually build things instead of actually just printing paper, right? So that is fundamentally the concept of 3D printing. And as you can recognize, it is a huge, discontinuity or a disruption of the manufacturing business, because now you can have a single printer manufacture hundreds of devices, hundreds of different things, right? And then, of course, robotics, which is kind of eliminating the need for recurrent human interventions and, people doing menial tasks, right? So that is, those are the areas that I would like to cover. And just moving on, okay, so I'll probably skip through this very quickly, looking at the audience today. But fundamentally, this is about, I mean, you're all familiar with the way software is delivered, right? it's mostly installed on your computer, or it's installed on your in your office on the server, and you use it, right? But the whole model of cloud computing is switching that. What happens is the burden of deploying the software is now with the vendor of the software itself. So the vendor of the software actually deploys it in his own, his or her own premises, and delivers it to you on the web, right? And you know, Office 365, for example, some of you might be using, is a classic example of software as a service, right? And of course, what this is doing is, if you now see Office 365, it's being used by both enterprise users as well as consumers. So what's happening is that there is a merger of the enterprise markets and the consumer markets, which implies that the quality of what we deliver as software as a service has to match that of enterprise software like Oracle or something, right? So that is a key trend that's taking on. Moving on to the Internet of Things, right? So the interesting things here are, you know, as I said, the phone is probably the first device that was connected on the Internet of Things. And then there are several wearable devices today. You have things like the watches, right? I actually wear one. And there are several other, you know, more sophisticated watches which actually carry even a SIM card. And then there are interesting medical devices, right, which connect you to the network in such a way that your health can be monitored on a regular basis. For example, there is a startup in the Valley which actually claims that they can build a device which can deliver insulin exactly like your pancreas. That means you don't need to actually keep testing your sugar. It behaves exactly like the pancreas, and all that you need to do is wear it around your arm or around your leg, and it will keep delivering insulin at periodic times through a laser technology, so it does not even pierce your skin, right? So that is one example. The other example is, of course, you know, patients being monitored for their heart condition through devices which are connected to their wrist or to their chest. And lastly, and interestingly, there are today medicines or tablets which carry electronics inside them, so that doctors can actually monitor how that medicine is acting inside the body. And also, those tablets can then have enough intelligence to release the medicine in a timed way. And those things are, again, interesting stuff that's happening. And all of this is possible because of the Internet of Things. Right. Then moving on, data. Right. We talked about this data, and the key thing about data is it's really like the oil of the previous century. Right. In the 20th century, we talked about the countries which had oil as the ones who would be most powerful. Well, today it is actually data. Right. The people who have the data and who are able to interpret the data are the ones who will have the ability to differentiate their services and their work so that they can deliver superior quality of services to everyone. And then related to that is something called machine learning, which is an interesting concept in the sense that, I mean, you're all used to using, you know, applications on your smartphone. And I dare say that every time you provide an input to that application, you actually expect a kind of input and you get that expectation met every time. Now, machine learning is about kind of challenging that and saying, as data is input into that program, can it actually start learning and giving better results every time? And so the output from the program is different every time based on the amount of data it has already read. So it is kind of like a human brain learning based on data patterns, right? So that is that is on the data side. And then finally on 3D printing and robotics, it's probably the most disruptive thing that's going to happen in the world in the next 5 years. It dramatically reduces the size of factories, okay? So you have a whole floor of this room can be reduced to the size of probably quarter of this room. with 3D printers which can generate the same volume, and also it is much more flexible. In the sense that today you can manufacture product X and tomorrow you can manufacture product Y with the same kind of equipment. And also the kind of human intervention that is required is significantly reduced to almost a large factory can be run by a handful of people, say less than 10, versus thousands of workers who used to be sitting in the on the shop floor working on these on the manufacturing of equipment. But what it does is it allows you to build factories on a scale that was not possible, right? So what you can do is you can take these workers that you now don't need on the factory floor and actually convert them more into knowledge workers who can create more and more interesting products and services, and at a scale that is just mind-boggling, right? And then the last part is, over the last 20 years or so, manufacturing has moved largely to the Asian continent simply because of the cost benefits. Well, what happens is with a combination of robotics and 3D printing, you can actually do manufacturing anywhere in the world at the same, pretty much the same cost. So it kind of becomes truly liberating. So it is probably the most destructive thing. In fact, 2015 was the first year when actually manufacturing in Europe became competitive to manufacturing in China. So which means that today a lot of manufacturing will kind of move back into Europe after probably a gap of 20 years or so, and this is a highly interesting phenomenon that we will see going forward. So I will change track now and just talk about what does it take to build a successful career, and these are just a few points, and then after which I will conclude my presentation. So the way I look at this, and this is kind of very apt to the presentations that happened before, right? So I kind of see ourselves, we are not in isolation, each one of us, right? So we have interactions with several entities within the world, and I think there is your spirit and your soul, and then there is your friends, family, co-workers, and your employer. As you can see, unless you can actually So my contention is that if you manage yourself in all these three dimensions, you can have a sustained growth and fulfillment in life. If you neglect any one of them, then you are actually going to probably regret it, 30, 40 years down the line. Especially there is a tendency to neglect our spiritual insight, and it is a human requirement. Now, what I believe is that every human being actually wants to search for his soul, and that is a very fundamental human requirement which, the modern day world, we have suppressed it a lot, but it is a fact that we all yearn for it, and we always get to it at a later stage in life when it's probably too late for us to do it. So it's obviously very important to kind of get that right in the beginning of your life, of your career, saying that there is a spiritual dimension to me which I am going to continue to sustain, feed and build, right? Because that is the one which kind of gives you the strength to go through some of the difficult parts of life. So some of the practical thoughts which come to me from whatever I have seen around me in last 35, 40 years of my professional life. One thing is this whole thing around a growth mindset, right? So what does this mean? So actually all of us are from childhood tutored on what I call the fixed mindset. We are always appreciated for the results that we come. Okay, you come first in class, congratulations. But it is possible that the person who has come 10th in class has actually worked much harder for it and actually deserves more kudos because the person has actually worked for something. Whereas the person who came first may have just done it through sheer ability. So remember that sheer ability or sheer talent does not take us very far in life. It is a gift from God that we get, and we need to sustain, build it, and drive it over time to make it lethal for us in our life. In fact, even the celebrated Albert Einstein said that genius is 99% inspiration and 1% per, 99% perspiration and 1% of inspiration. So basically the talent part is just 1% of what we do. And so it's very important to understand that. So what I mean by the growth mindset really is that you need to appreciate the journey, the effort, the mistakes that you make and you learn. All these need to be appreciated along life. And you know, the result is just comes over time automatically as you get. In fact, this is very similar to our Hindu philosophy as well, where we talk about what is called disinterested action. That means we have the passion, we do the action, but we really don't care, or we don't focus on the results, right? And the results will come assuming that we are putting in the effort and work. The second part is, in the current day world, everything changes, right? So when I was just out of college, people used to tell me things change in 5 years or 10 years. Now, well, that cycle has become 1 year, right? So what you do today is probably outdated 1 year from now. So and also the world has become very complex, right? So you really can't understand everything that's happening. So there is a lot of ambiguity around you. So how do you handle this ambiguity and how do you handle this change is a very important aspect, and it's something that you need to build into your life. And of course, excellence is very critical, more critical than it used to be. You know, in India, one of the reasons why India is being held back is because we do not actually focus greatly on excellence. It's about, you know, okay, as long as I'm earning my living, it's okay, I can manage, I don't need to do anything more. But I think it's what is tending to happen in the world is that excellence has become a need for even survival, right? So it is very critical to understand that you have to excel in your chosen area of work, whatever it is, right? And then, of course, two other things which are very, very important, which I have found, is that you have to build your network. As you saw the previous diagram, the world around you is like there are a lot of connects around it. Your family, your friends, your co-workers, your employer, your soul, of course, is what is within you. You know, it is very important to kind of build that network and, you know, connect it up for yourself. The reason I say that is that when you need help, you can't suddenly go to someone and ask for it, because you don't have a relationship. It's very important to build that connect with your co-workers. You may be working with them today, you may not be working with them tomorrow simply because you've changed your job, but doesn't mean that you break those relationships. It's very, very critical to kind of continue to sustain those relationships throughout your life. They always come to your aid when you most need them. And then, how do you sustain this network, right? So it's all about being what I call a giver, right? What that means is that, you know, typically human beings say, okay, if somebody asks me for help, I say, okay, what can he do for me, or he or she can do for me in return? And I will help that person only if I can expect something back. Now, well, that doesn't work like that always. And again, this comes back to our philosophy also, right? So it is like, if I do good, then somebody else will do good to me, right? It may not be the same person, right? So it is like also that I build my soul when I do good. So do you really want to be in that mode of reciprocation where you say, I will do good only if someone else does good to me? Or do you want to simply do good, right? Give your knowledge, knowledge is the only thing in the world which, when you give, you actually build it, right? Because the more you are able to teach somebody, the more you learn, right? All other things in life, including money, is something which you want to hold on to, but knowledge is not something you need to hold on to, right? So knowledge is something you can give, and that is one of the things. Knowledge, experience, these are things that we should be sharing freely with people without having any concern about whether I will get something back, right? So it's about being a giver. And you know, there is data from several you know, human resource organizations which says that people who give are the ones who are most successful in life, not the ones who take only and not give. For example, the common notion would be that people who take right from others and step over others are the ones who are successful in life. But for sustained success and for you know, sustained happiness in life, one needs to be a giver, right? And you know, you give more than you take. That's when you know your bank account, as I say, is positive, right? Your emotional bank account is positive, so you can, you're always, you know, happy and going. So with this, I kind of come to the end of what I had to say. Hopefully, I made some sense to you guys, and you know, it has whetted your appetite to kind of think about it more. In fact, you know, I find that I actually read both our own philosophy as well as a lot of Western thought, especially in the human resources area. And I see very interesting things that seem to happen when we bring the two together. So I would encourage you to kind of do that as well, and you know, try to understand what is the Western way of thinking, which, by the way, is more and more converging towards our way of thinking over the years. Okay, so there was this book ages ago, about 40 years back, written by a guy called Dale Carnegie, which said how to influence people and win friends, right? Now that book is kind of outdated today, right? So it's more about, you know, how you network, how you become more generous with what you have, and it's not about fooling people, right, and making friends with them, but making friends with them more genuinely, right, and from the inside of your heart. So with that, I've kind of come to the end of this, and I really thank Sundar and Ramanjanacharya for giving me this this opportunity to express my thoughts. I really appreciate that, and thank you very much for giving me a patience here.